Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for staying with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I know why you're here, because you know, we have so much fun around here. And, it's just a place to be, isn't it? We have fun. We get smarter. We introduce you to some really cool people, really smart people, like Joan Pride, senior editor with our Kiplinger editors, the always cool, always intellectual, most of the time fairly acerbic, and not acerbic, and our good friend Joan Pride. Welcome back to the show.
Hey Jim, thanks for having me back yet again.
Yet again, after all these
Against
years.
Your better judgment.
Well, we take a vote here every week, and you slide
squeak
through.
Squeak by like American
squeak
Idol.
Squeak by yeah. every time. She's the senior editor with the Kiplinger editors, ladies and gentlemen. And as you know, we cover the most recent Kiplinger letter, what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days, and we do that every week with Joan, so she can keep us posted on how things are going. And Joan, the economy is on the front page, and
sure.
There as you guys point out on the top line there, there are hints of a bottom. Fed Chairman Bernanke this week came out and was a little bit more optimistic. I talked to dozens of people who are thought leaders and movers and shakers across the country and around the world every week, and on the show and off the show, and I'm seeing some little glimmers of hope. It looks like the light at the end of the tunnel is not, in fact, a headlight coming at us.
You are. Well, that's what kind of glimmers are you talking about? I'd be curious to know, because, you know, I'm here in the ivory tower. You know, Washington, D.C., as you know, is not reality.
Joan, you're in bizarro world.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true, too.
Yeah. So what's happening?
What's happening in the real world?
Well, in the real world, where people make payroll and pay their taxes and play by the rules, in the real world, I'm seeing people talking about contracts being talked about, and people are talking a little bit more about opening up for new business and a little bit less about survival. Talking a little bit more about what hope for the future instead of making sure I don't collapse. We don't fall into an abyss.
What about people starting businesses?
Well, see, that's a very important topic, and I've been interviewed quite a bit about that recently by some of the national outlets, mm-hmm. and startups are really having a hard time right now.
Well, sure.
And the reason is they just don't have access to capital.
Right. I mean, it's got to be harder for them than for anybody else.
Well, and in a unique way for our time, this time is unique, I should say, with regard to the past, Joan, because the credit card availability has just dried up, and so many businesses were founded in the 90s, for example, in the early part of this decade, with credit card lines,
right?
And or home equity, which people don't have as much. Did you see the report the other day that such a high, like 30% of homeowners today owe more than their house is worth? Did you see that?
30%? Wow.
Yeah, I saw a report on that recently. And so the point there is that if that's the case, that means they don't have any equity
that
they could borrow, I guess. A lot of businesses have been started in the last 20 years on home equity.
Right.
Aggregation of credit card debt, home equity, their own money. And maybe even they cashed out their 401ks.
Right.
And started a business, which, as you know, most 401ks are now 101ks.
Right. There isn't as much four to cash, more like three or two or one. So
that's exactly right.
Out.
Exactly. And so, startups are, I think that's going to be the one thing about this recovery, unless something happens to help startups, which I don't see coming down the pike. I'm not sure what that would be. Some SBA program maybe, but yeah. But startups are not going to be as robust an element of the recovery this time as it has been in the past.
That makes sense.
And all of that's not a bad thing, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because it's a bad thing for those people who are unemployed who would like to start a business,
right.
as I did in 89, by the way, 20 years ago this month.
Wow.
But sometimes startups do this other thing. They often contribute a lot to the marketplace. They contribute innovation and they actually, you know, create some businesses that are needed. But sometimes startups also don't know how to charge for things. Because, as you know, most startups fail.
Mm-hmm.
Most small businesses, over half, fail in 4 years now. And so what they do in that four-year period is they underprice products and services because they don't know how much they should charge. And so they consequently don't stay in business. And that also devalues the price of things.
Well, sure.
And so that's there is that element of startups that's out there. A lot of people don't talk about, but
right.
But anyway, why did you ask me about startups?
Well, I'm just curious. We talked a lot here about how this recovery is going to look and how it's going to differ from past recoveries. And I know the Kiplinger. I know I'm a little bit off the Kiplinger letter at this point because it's going beyond what it's talking about. But this inability to get credit and the changes in the credit card industry, we think is going to probably make this recovery different from others. And I have to think it's not going to be. I mean, it'll be a recovery, but it may not be, you know, a gangbusters recovery because
right.
you won't have all that debt just lighting a fire under everything and fueling it.
There are two things. You are exactly right, Joan. And
as usual.
And, exactly. But this credit thing is something I've been predicting really for a year. I've been telling people, I know I was one of the first because I didn't hear anybody else talking about it, and I've been called a lot about this, so somebody must have gotten wind of it. But this has been something I noticed this credit card thing a year ago. And it made me realize the impact it was going to have on startups, but that is the one thing the startup element is the one thing that's going to be different about this recovery, and there are two things that are going to drive the recovery or not. One of them is the credit availability, and the other is just the pent up demand. I mean, that's going to be a counterbalancing thing for the recovery is pent up demand for stuff. And we're going to get Joan to talk to us about this some more right after these messages. 20 after, I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back.
In a white room with black curtains, near the station.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Blasingame. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you check it out when you get a chance. You can find my blog there, which we update on a regular basis. You can check out my knowledge base, AskJim.biz. You can listen to archives, read articles. Check out our Brain Trust members. Subscribe to my free newsletter. Whatever you got, 5 seconds, 1 minute, 15 minutes. We got something you can read or listen to. I hope you'll check it out. And if you would like for us to follow you home with some stuff and send you our new stuff, we'll do that too by RSS, by subscription, whatever you like. Check it out and use it to your advantage. We built it for you. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame, twitter.com/Jim Blasingame, all one word. And look forward to hearing about that. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about the economy and what it's going to take to get this thing going again. And, you know, one last little thought on what we were talking about earlier. I've been saying now for a year, and I'm still convinced, and every day that goes by, I'm more convinced that big business in Washington, D.C., Washington meaning the government, big business and the government, Wall Street and the government, I should say, that's more accurate, Wall Street and the government has gotten us into this mess, but Main Street small businesses will lead us out of this mess, and that's what's happening right now.
But they need the tools to do that.
They do. Now, the good news is small businesses can get credit. If you got a, if you got an operating, viable small business, you can get the credit you need. In fact, banks, independent community banks, are lined up ready to loan you money.
I'll bet. Yeah.
That's happening right now.
Yeah.
But Joan, I mentioned the pent up demand. I think that's going to be one of the high spots. But the issue is, and we talked about the credit a minute ago. The issue is, I think people are going to be less likely to want to use credit than they used to.
I think, well, that's going to be what's interesting about this recovery. It'll be interesting to see if that marathon consumer that we used to talk about will come back. And I have to guess no.
We miss them, though, don't we?
Right away.
Don't we miss them? We miss
them. Yeah, we need them to buy stuff, buy lots of stuff.
Washing machines and automobiles and things like that. Hey, Joan, one of the things you guys report this week in the Kiplinger letter is that the world trade level has dropped 12% this year. Tell us about, put that in perspective for us.
Well, we're saying that's the sharpest contraction since World War II. And we say of the top 15 U.S. markets, 14 will shrink. And I guess China won't shrink, but it will gain at its slowest pace in 19 years. So this is definitely a global recession.
Well, China is gonna grow at only 6.5%, while every other country except India is gonna have a contraction.
China, India, 6.5% is practically a recession, given.
Yeah, but for America, that would be dangerous.
Overheated economy.
It would be. Right. So they're bless their hearts, they're down to only 6.5. But no, it's an interesting thing, and the trade thing, though, I hope that's 100% an example of just an economic contraction. What we don't know, and I don't think you guys cover that this week, is if there's any element of that 12% that's protectionism. That's what I worry about, Joan.
Because
that's the thing. That's the thing. See, I don't know if you remember this. You won't remember because you weren't here, nor was I. But if you remember your history. After the crash of 29, we had a recession for a couple of years, and actually there was a little bit of a bull market a year or two later on, a little bit of a recovery, but the reason we had the depression was primarily because of protectionism, the Smoot-Hawley tariff bill.
Right.
And higher taxes and protectionism spun this the United States and the globe into the depression that we had. And so I've got a protectionist antenna that runs up every time I hear a number like this 12%. It makes me wonder if, you know, how much of that is protectionism.
I'd like to see that protectionist antenna. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's well, I'll be in D.C. in a couple of weeks, so I'll show it to you.
I'm frantically making my travel plans, but I haven't made any.
I know, you better get out of town. Yeah. Some sectors, though, Joan, are doing okay, and you guys report that this week.
Right.
With the railroads.
Which makes sense. We say rail equipment, pharmaceuticals, of course. And this is interesting to me. Jewelry, coins, and artwork.
Hmm.
And because people
that makes sense. Well, I see the. Well, I guess maybe
it is our hedges against inflation
and gold and stuff. The rail equipment troubles me a little bit, though, Joan, because there are a lot of boxcars sitting on the side of the rails right now.
Well, we say strong demand from Saudi Arabia and China.
Okay.
So they must be building up rail.
Exports, like engines and things like that.
Right.
Maybe some steel rails or something. Foreign investment, you guys, you're predicting will decline. You got a big number here, right? 30 to 50%.
30 to 50% this year.
Wow.
And then 21% next year.
That's a lot. That's an important part of the capitalizing of our economy, isn't it, Joan?
Right. And I think one of the important points here is that we're going to lead the way out of the recession, I think we're coming out of the recession first, and other countries are going to follow.
Well, we went in first.
What usually seems to happen.
We went in first, though.
We went in first, right.
So
we sneezed and the world caught a cold, yeah.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. I just think our dynamic economy with the entrepreneurs. And, Joan, look. You know what you just said? You just agreed with me. You just told the world that I was right.
Uh-oh.
Because you know why we're going to be the first?
That statement.
The reason we're going to be the first to come out is because of our heroes, Joan. Small business owners. We've got a small business force in America, unparalleled on planet Earth. 29 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm so proud of those guys.
Jim Blassingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what Kiplinger's has to say about what's going on in the world these days. We're talking about the economy at this moment. Joan, China, as you report, is really in a position to act as an engine of global growth. They're, with their economy still positive, when the economy turns around, and with everybody seeking efficiency so much and seeking to hold costs down and everything, China's probably poised to really be a beneficiary of this recovery. Do you know the legendary investor Jimmy Rogers, Jim Rogers?
No.
You know who I'm talking about?
No.
He's a great investor. He's often quoted on Wall Street, and he actually has become an Asian expert now. He actually lives in Singapore right now, and he was on the show earlier this week. We interviewed him from Singapore, and he's just talking about some of the things that's going on over in Asia and how dynamic it is over there. But you guys say that they're in a position to act as an engine for global growth. My friend Ted Fishman, who wrote the book China Inc., he and I were talking about China, and I said something about China playing by the rules, and he said, Jim, you don't understand. He said, China is going to be making the rules. And I've asked other China experts about that statement since then, and they all agreed that he's right.
Oh, sure.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's a cautionary tale, isn't it?
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
So, folks, this is an issue we've got to deal with. And Joan, over on page two, you guys talk about the toxic assets. Are they even trying to get people to buy these toxic mortgage assets? What are they? I haven't really even seen that they haven't even spun them off into a way for people to buy these assets, have they?
Not yet. I thought that was the plan, but they haven't done that yet.
The good bank, bad bank thing, right?
Right. And we're saying that private investors are just sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what Uncle Sam is going to do, how they're going to structure this.
I don't understand why they haven't done an RTC, Resolution Trust kind of thing, the SNL crisis kind of thing. I don't understand why they haven't already spun off the good bank, bad bank thing, because, Joan, those toxic assets are just bit by bit dragging down our financial system.
Right, and we can't hope for a really good recovery until we get, wipe that stuff away. It's not going to come back.
Well, and it's just continuing to sicken our banking system. I mean, we just had the stress test for the 19 banks the country's largest banks, and some of them did okay, but some of them are going to have more capital. And
right.
Part of the reason are these toxic assets, right?
Right, exactly.
So I'm anxious to see them get that done, and I don't know why they haven't made that happen, Joan. Shopping malls. You guys report that there's still a shoe to drop on shopping malls.
Well, yeah, we say they haven't seen the worst yet. There are a lot of stores, a lot of retailers are still shutting down, so that's going to increase the pain of lost rents at a lot of malls. We say vacancies are 8% in the first quarter of this year, and we say that's going to keep going up.
Well, Joan, think about when you walk into a mall. Of course, we've had big concerns fail, right?
Yeah.
Some of the biggies have failed. Some of the anchor kind of tenants have failed. But Joan, look at all the small businesses that are in malls. And when you walk in there, in a new mall, you see, oh, there's a new business, and it's a startup. It's somebody who started a retail shop into a mall. Well, now we go back to the startup issue that we talked about earlier. The prospects for these malls for new tenants are not going to be as high this time as in the past because of the startup situation.
Exactly.
So they got the challenges. Joan, the automobile industry, a lot of smoke is cleared up in a lot of ways with regard to what's going to happen. I mean, Chrysler apparently is going into bankruptcy.
Well, and we were talking about this yesterday. Look at the big three. One of them's going to be owned by the government, another one's going to be owned by a union, and another one's going to be owned privately.
Yeah.
And that's going to be pretty strange.
Jonah, I've got this little piece of information here. 11 years ago, on this day, Daimler-Benz bought Chrysler for $40 billion.
Oh, gee.
On this day, 1998, folks, Daimler-Benz bought Chrysler $40 billion. That was that's an interesting little piece of history considering what's going on right now. Joan Pride and I will be right back, folks. We got more to come after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Down the street one day.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. And also the Kiplinger website is Kiplinger, KIPLINGER.com. I hope you'll check it out, too. It's a good one, and there you can find the publications that they produce, like the Kiplinger Letter, which has been in constant publication and distribution since 1923. How about that, folks? How about that for a great small business, American small family business legacy and tradition? What a great story that is. And, of course, they got their bi-weekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter, there's the Tax Letter. Did I mention that, Joan? And then, of course, the biofuels letter. The California, the tax, the agriculture, and the biofuels. That's right, isn't it? Is that all of them?
I believe so.
And then, of course, that magazine thing.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
What about that phone number?
Oh, our phone number, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
What about that
30-day
free trial?
I believe we still have that.
The Blassingame 30-day free trial. I negotiated hard for you on that, guys, so take advantage of that. Joan, back to the auto industry. So the government's going to own a lot of Chrysler, but the union's going to own a lot of Chrysler, too.
But
GM, which may go into bankruptcy too,
right.
GM is going to be owned 55% by the unions, 30% by the government, and 10% by everybody else?
Yes, that's right. That's what I heard.
The bondholders got crammed down, didn't they? They got the short end of that stick. I got to tell you, Joan, I have to be honest with you. And, folks, I'm just going to be candid with you about this.
Uh-oh.
I own a General Motors automobile, and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the future, if there's an automobile company of any kind that's owned by the federal government and the UAW, and they're the ones that own it, and private industry, private businesses got screwed in that reorganization, I am not going to be a customer for that company. So I'm just making that statement. I'm just making that. I wanted people to know. And you know, I always like for people to know where I stand, Joan.
I know.
I got a problem. I got a problem with that. I got a problem with the union and the government winding up being the owners of these companies. But that's another story. Joan, let's move down and talk about transit. Congress wants more government control over railroad rates and services. Joan, what's this all about? It's just the government intervention just never seems to stop.
Well, this is apparently coming out of the judiciary committees in Congress, and they're attacking the antitrust exemption of railroads.
Hmm.
So I guess there's legislation in Congress that would revoke the exemption. So that's.
Do they think there's some kind of consolidation? I mean, the antitrust laws would have kicked in if there had been some kind of price fixing opportunity or you know, some kind of organized pricing structure. I mean, I don't understand where they're coming from on this. Do you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of implied here because we say if it becomes law, and we expect it will, shippers, short line owners, and others will find it easier to ward off what they view as unfair moves by major lines. So I don't know what they mean by unfair moves, if they mean pricing or shutting down unprofitable routes or something like that. I don't know.
Well, there's something else here on aviation. What's this all about?
You mean killing global aviation alliances?
Yeah.
Well, what this a different House committee wants these alliances to end within 3 years, and then I guess they're going to review whether there's some antitrust problem with them.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the government thinking that they know better about how to run organizations, run the marketplace. And let me tell you something, folks, they can't even run their own business. They're a basket case. Our federal government is a basket case when it comes to managing the government. And for them to, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to keep our eyes open and our ears open. We've got to pay attention to, look, I don't know enough about these particular issues to know where the merits are and where they're not. But all I see is I've got that antenna that I run up again. I've got that interventionist, that government snooping antenna that just makes me creepy to me. And folks, we're just going to have to pay attention to it. Those of us in the marketplace, we're just going to have to pay attention. Joe, let's move over and talk about the flu season. Is it over? Is a swine flu history? What's going on?
Well, this is a tough one, as you know. The swine flu, we thought could become a pandemic, and now things are beginning to slow down and calm down. There have been a couple of deaths, but I guess new cases aren't really being found as rapidly as we might have expected.
I think so, both of the deaths were very closely associated with people coming from Mexico, weren't they?
Well,
the child and then the mother, I think.
The mother was already sick with something else. They didn't say what it was, so her immune system was already compromised. So that may have been part of the problem.
And she had come from Mexico, though.
Right.
I don't know that for a fact,
but I would think that would
I think
make sense.
I saw that yesterday, and the child had also come from Mexico, as I understand it. And the only point we're making there is that there was already a lot of swine flu. I got a couple of more things I want to ask you about the swine flu thing. We come back after these messages, and then we're going to move on. We're going to talk about some human resources things, the postal services in the news, and we got some other stuff right after these messages. Tintel, Joan Pryde is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you. And we got Joan Pryde, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, right here with us. Joan, I want to come back to this flu thing. You said it may become a pandemic, but the truth is they actually called it a pandemic.
Yes.
They wound up saying, and this was an official thing, they wound up saying that it was a pandemic. And I looked up that definition, and what it meant, what they were talking about was where it was widely distributed, but even if it wasn't widely populated, it was at least widely distributed. And I think we wound up with maybe 3/4 of the states had somebody with the swine flu in it.
Wow.
I saw a map on that the other day. So that's, to me, I thought a pandemic. I mean, we only had a few hundred cases in the United States, Joan.
Right.
That doesn't sound like something that would sound like a pandemic to me.
That's true.
So, but in the loose definition of a pandemic, they said we had one. And Jonah, I don't know. I'm a little concerned. And you said this. You and I were talking this week.
Right.
You were talking about your thoughts on this, because I'm a little concerned about the crying wolf thing. And I'd like for you to tell the audience what you were thinking about that.
Well, my thought was, we're never really going to know. It's possible they did cry wolf, but we're never going to know whether the fact that they swung into action real fast and took all the actions they did saved us, or if they were crying wolf.
Mm-hmm. It sort of reminds me of Joan, the toxic situation we had back in September, October, November. We'll never know if the government was overreaching and created more problems than they tried to fix, or if they should have, they would have been better off to let things go. We just will never know that,
right?
Will we?
That's right.
And so I guess I'd rather they, and in terms of the swine flu, I guess I'd rather they'd err on the side of crying wolf.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think I am too. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. But you know, Jonah, you just got to believe that with the healthier conditions we have, the more hygiene we have, the globally, not just the United States, but the medicine that we have, I just think that and the ability now these days, Joan, to stay home and work.
Right.
That's gotta help keep us from getting into something like we got back into in 1918.
Yeah, I would think, to the extent that employers are willing to let people do that, that could help an awful lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, look at how much we know. I mean, look at how quickly schools were let out and people stayed home.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
In another time, Joan, that wouldn't have happened.
That's right.
Who knows what could have happened.
That's true.
And as viral as this thing was, it could have gotten out of hand. So I guess we have to tip our hats to the feds on this one.
I think so.
So I'm an equal opportunity guy here. You know what I mean? I diss them on one side and praise them on the other
side.
Impressive. Yeah, yeah. I'm intellectually honest here, Joan. Let's go move down to the Cobra thing. I want to make sure we get this in before we go. You've got some thoughts on this Cobra police, they call them.
Well, just keep in mind, if you're an employer and you let a worker go, if it was called an involuntary termination between September 1st of last year and the end of this, the end of next year, I believe, it's the end of this year, you are part of this whole COBRA subsidy thing. The federal government is willing to subsidize 65% of their COBRA premium, that is the continuing health insurance for them, for up to 9 months. But guess what? You, the employer, have to put out that money, and then the way you get reimbursed is by taking a credit on your payroll tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And the point here is that the IRS is going to be watching those payroll tax returns very carefully to make sure that nobody is trying to sneak around and take credit that they're not entitled to. So you could make an inadvertent mistake and get caught up in this.
I see. Okay. Well, it sounds like something that we probably need some help on, Joan. Sounds a little complicated.
Well, it's
who should we turn to on something like this? You got any ideas?
Well, Kiplinger, first of all. We have some good stuff on our website about it. But you may have to find an attorney who knows a COBRA policy. I would even Google COBRA subsidy on the web. You'd be
good
amazed
point.
At the amount of information you're going to get.
Because hey, she's right, folks. Kiplinger has a lot of stuff on this. They cover this really well. Joan, hey, thanks for being here. Good job today,
as always.
Thank you, Jim. We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. She's the best, and she'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.